Meditations with Moon Body Soul. I am recording today from a pretty exhausted and tired place, but I did want to record an episode. Not only do I want to try to stay consistent with this podcast, but I also want to just be really real and honest with you guys. My life is not always exciting and laughy, high energy. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, I'm currently dealing with some PMDD, some issues around my cycles and hormones, and sometimes I am just outright exhausted. I don't want to do anything, but I find that if I do try to dive into the things that I love, like recording and sharing on this podcast, that it helps me. Helps me crawl out of that hole just a little bit. So thank you guys for bearing with me. When I feel like this, I usually reach for books and audio recordings and audiobooks and things like that that help inspire me, uplift me, take me out of my funk, just bring new ideas into my brain instead of this kind of overarching pessimistic view that I'm currently holding, where everything sucks, I have cramps, I feel horrible, everything's going wrong, nothing's gonna work. That mindset, it takes me away from that into this world of possibility and creativity. So today we are going to discuss one of my favorite books that helps me change my mindset, that I have gotten a lot of value out of reading, and I would love it if you've never read it to introduce it to you. But before we jump into that book, I want to mention a few exciting things about the podcast. If you are listening to this podcast on Spotify, you are going to notice a lot of fun features that the podcast now has. So if you go to the episode, you can see that there are polls and questions and you can answer them and I will receive those answers. There's also a fun feature where you can leave me a voicemail. So maybe you have a question or just something you want to share with us. You can leave a voicemail and I can play it back on the next podcast, and I would love to hear from you. So you can do that within Spotify, or if you want to follow the link in my Instagram bio, it takes you to a page that says leave me a voicemail, and you can do it from there, and I would be so appreciative. I would love to hear from you guys, what you want to hear about, maybe questions you have, or anything you want to share with the listeners. I love this feature. I think it just helps build more community, which, you know, that's what I'm all about. Another feature that I'm really excited about, when we get into the podcast, you will hear some soft music playing during the podcast. I love this. I've been listening to a couple of podcasts that do this and I really enjoy it. So I'm going to try it out on this episode and hopefully you can hear it even if you're not on Spotify. But if you are on Spotify, you should be able to hear it, no problem. Without further ado, let's dive in. The book we are discussing today is Women Who Run With the Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. So I'm not sure when this book first entered my orbit because it has been here a while. I'm not sure who first suggested I read it, but I see other people talking about it all the time, so this might not be the first time you've heard about it either, but I still think bringing up some of the themes and things that I've gotten from this book might still be helpful for you, even if you've read it before. This is a book that I come back to again and again, and it's not because I read it from front to back all the way through, but I can just pick it up, open up a random chapter and read what message that it has for me, and I absolutely love books like that. So the author of this book, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who I hope I'm saying her name right, is a Jungian analyst, an author, and a poet. She is the author of several books, and this book, Women Who Run With the Wolves, has been translated in over 30 languages and has sold over 1 million copies. So again, maybe you've heard of this book, but there is a reason why we are talking about it today. It is a super important book to me. I have a soft copy of this book, and it is completely gone through it. It is completely torn up because I've taken it with me on a lot of different trips. I read it in the bath. Is a very worn book, very, very loved book. But most recently, I downloaded this audiobook through the Libby app. And if you're not familiar with what the Libby app is, It's incredible. You can connect a local library. I still have mine connected to the Los Angeles Public Library, and it gives you access to all of the books that that library has access to. So audiobooks are on there. You can download them for free. Sometimes you do have to wait to check out a book, which is a little frustrating, but they're free. And usually you have a couple weeks wait if it's a popular book, but sometimes things will be available for download right away. When I downloaded Women Who Run with Wolves, I was expecting it to be this full, very, very thick book that has over 582 pages. However, the download on Libby for the Los Angeles Public Library of this book is a 2-hour long talk by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and it's basically this underground recording of Women Who Run with the Wolves. Like, her first edition was this recording. It wasn't even a hard copy book. It was this recording that was passed around in a lot of different circles. So it has similar themes of this book, but it's a lot shorter. It's 2 hours. If you have access to Libby and you can look that up, I definitely think you should listen to it. I'll actually read the description on my Libby for this book. It says, first published 3 years before the print edition of Women Who Run with the Wolves made publishing history, this original audio edition quickly became an underground bestseller. For its insights into the inner lives of women, it established Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes as one of the most important voices of our time in the field of Jungian psychology, myth, and women's mysteries. Drawing from her work as a psychoanalyst and encantadora, the keeper of old stories, Dr. Estes uses myth and folktales to illustrate how societies systemically strip away the feminine spirit. Through an exploration into the nature of the wild woman archetype, Dr. Estes helps listeners rediscover and free their own wild nature. The magical storytelling, myths, and commentary on Women Who Run with the Wolves continues to inspire a new level of self-knowledge among listeners young and old. That is something I really want to highlight, where she says a new level of self-knowledge. One of my true core beliefs that I've probably mentioned on the podcast is I believe we all have this wisdom in ourselves. Although we go seeking for answers in books and podcasts and coaches and all of these places, religion, everywhere you go seeking for these answers, I truly believe that we do not have any answers outside of ourselves, that our true answers come from ourselves, from an inner knowing of the self, this self-knowing. And so the best teachers or books or things that are going to give you quote-unquote answers are really just going to help tap you into that self-knowing, which is why I love this book so much. And I love that that was in the description. I didn't even realize it. In this book, she dives into the fact that we have all of these different facets of ourselves. And the wild woman is this instinctual self. She says that she is the source of creativity, passion, and intuition. She is the wild and free parts of ourselves that is often suppressed by society. She tells us how that archetype is often depicted by a wolf or a bear, hence the name, the Women Who Run with the Wolves. And my favorite, she is also associated with the moon, the night, and the wilderness. So this archetype is a reminder that we are connected to the natural world. This archetype teaches us how to live in harmony with nature and with ourselves, and also how to trust our intuition and follow our own path. She does this by introducing different stories and folktales. So every chapter will be a different story that has been passed down. She first tells the story and then she breaks down the story. This is why, as I was mentioning earlier, you can pick up this book and go to any chapter and dive into something really meaningful and really powerful. They all have different themes, but it usually comes back to this theme of the wild woman archetype. I also really enjoy this because when you look back at different cultures and see how powerful stories and myths and folktales were, they were passed on usually just through someone in the community being a storyteller and remembering this story from being told from someone else. So it wasn't even written down anywhere, but these stories were a powerful way for information to be passed from generation to generation to different people and different cultures. And if you look into our own cultures, we still are sharing stories through movies and shows. I mean, that is a form of storytelling. But I love that some of these stories that she is sharing are ancient stories that have been passed down, and she usually goes into where the story's from and the history behind the story. So I just love that it's giving these stories new life and how they're still so relevant today, even if they're thousands of years old. The afterword of the book has a section called Story as Medicine, where she breaks down the importance of storytelling and why it was so important in her own family, her own culture, her own heritage, and how these stories are very, very healing, but that they don't exist in a vacuum and that you can't just understand them from hearing them. You have to live the story, which is why I think this book is so powerful. If you can read a chapter and let that sink in and see how it applies to your life, maybe over a week or a couple of days, come back to the story and see where you can find those connections. But in the beginning of the book, Dr. Estes talks about how these stories were auditory stories at first. As I was mentioning, they were just told through speech. And that is believed that there are three paths when you are listening to a story. There is the path of the heart. This is a path of feeling and intuition. It's when we listen to a story with our heart, we're moved. We feel emotions. We feel the joy, the sorrow, fear, love, any emotions that are coming through with the characters in the story. Next, there is the path of the mind. This is the path of intellect and understanding. When we listen to a story with our mind, we get the meaning of the story. We can ask ourselves questions like, what is the message? How can I apply this to my own life? But the final path is the path of the soul. This is the path of spirit and connection. It is the path that when we listen to these stories with our soul, we allow ourselves to be transported to another world. We connect with the characters in the story and we feel like we are a part of the story. And she asks in the very beginning, one of the very first stories, listen then with soul hearing now, for this is the mission of story. I really, really like that. Now, I'm not going to go through this book and read you any direct stories from it. I think that I wouldn't really do it justice reading from the book, because she really breaks down stories, even if they are smaller myths or fairy tales. She goes into them in such detail and breaks them down and really gets the wisdom out of them. But also, I believe that would be some sort of copyright infringement. So I'm not sure if I can play you any of her audiobook or read you any parts of the stories. I think I can give you some little nuggets here and there, but my goal of this podcast was to focus on the main themes from this book. One of the main themes that we've already talked about is the importance of the wild woman archetype. So through these stories, she helps get us in touch with our instinctual, primal, feminine psyche, the parts of ourself that is connected to nature, our bodies, and our emotions. She calls it a reclaiming of the wild woman, which I really like, because it seems like in our society we have been conditioned to almost forget this wild woman archetype. We have all of these agreed upon societal standards of looking a certain way, dressing a certain way, acting a certain way, and anybody who goes beyond those standards is usually seen as an outsider. They can be seen as someone who has quote unquote let themselves go if they're not keeping up with the societal standards, or maybe they're seen as someone who is a little bit out there or crazy or a tomboy or whatever it is. This wild woman archetype is not what our current society thinks of as a woman. And I think that's really powerful, just to remember our wild nature. I know that since moving from the city out into the woods, this is something that I've tapped into more and more and more. It feels so much more foreign now for me to be on a computer working or have some sort of public event where I need to go talk and socialize and be with people, because I've spent so much time now in nature. I feel so much more comfortable surrounded by my garden, surrounded by the plants, going on a hike through the woods. And it's not just a comfort, it's a feeling of being at home in my body, where now when I go out and I say I'm going to a wedding or a gathering where I get fixed up and dressed up, it's not that I don't feel myself. And she talks about it in the book too. There are times when it feels really good to decorate ourselves and put on makeup or dress up or whatever it is, but it just seems that I feel more myself, more at home with myself, not having to worry about those things and being out in nature. So that's one aspect of the wild woman archetype, although there are many aspects to that archetype. It's really this like primal feeling within us. So things that we weren't taught by society, but things that are just instinctual that we know, and getting in touch with those things. Another big theme in the book that I really connect with is the importance of creativity, which I know you guys know from listening to the podcast, how important I believe creativity is, how it's a powerful force for healing and transformation, and how expressing yourself in those ways can really transform your life. That's a common theme within this book as well. And she doesn't say there's one right way to be creative. She talks about how each woman expresses themselves uniquely through their own version of creativity, whatever that is. Maybe it's writing, art, dance, music, whatever it is, just finding those creative outlets in order to express yourself, and how when we can't fully express ourselves, how we feel this detachment away from the wild woman, or how we may not feel like ourselves. In the book, Dr. Estes writes about the wild woman being this symbol of creativity and this reminder that we are natural, creative, powerful beings, that this is something that we inherently have. And she gives a lot of different ways to tap into creativity. She talks about a wild woman dance, you know, getting into a place where you can play music, maybe beats or drums, and just dancing and moving in ways that feel natural to you, not worrying about what they look like at all, but just moving the body and letting it move the energy, and how that can help us get into a more creative state. She also talks about a powerful way of doing a story circle with women, which I find really fascinating, because this is similar to how the moon circles work. We inevitably do share stories, although my prompts for our journaling and the things that we talk about aren't really prompting us to write a story or come up with a story. But she talks about how you can sit in a circle with women and take turns telling stories, that they don't need to be about anything in particular. They could be about your past, they could be about your childhood, they could be about your present, but how we can take turns telling stories and listening to stories, paying attention to the emotions that they evoke, and allowing yourself to be moved and inspired by the stories of other women, which I'm finding really powerful. And maybe I'll try to incorporate story in the next moon circle more than just our own process of journaling or different prompts and things to think about. Now, the biggest theme that I connect with in her writing is the process of healing. So this book really is a collection of stories and myths and fairy tales about healing from trauma, abuse, neglect. I really think that is the most powerful part of this book for me personally, is just hearing these stories and remembering my own healing process and tapping into my own traumas, my own past stuff that comes up through reading these stories. One of the concepts that she introduces almost right at the end of the book, I really, really like and want to share with you, It's this concept of descansos. So she talks about if you've ever traveled in the South, maybe in Mexico, New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, you see along the roadways little white crosses, usually with people's names on them, or little markings. A descansos is essentially a marking of a death. And she talks about how a woman in her lifetime, even before she's just 20 years old, she's experienced hundreds of little deaths. She discusses how when you make any decision, you're leaving something else behind. Maybe you go this new direction and you decide not to do that thing. And so there's a little death there. And she gives this activity that you can do where you can take a big sheet of paper and on one end mark your birth and on the other end your present moment where you are today. And then take the time filling in all of the descansos or all of the little deaths that you've had. She says, I encourage you to make descansos, to sit down with the timeline of your life and ask, where are the crosses? Where are the places that must be remembered and blessed? In all our meanings that you've brought forward into your life today, they must be remembered, they must be forgotten at the same time. It takes time and patience. Be gentle with yourself and make the descansos, the resting places for the aspects of yourself that were on their way to somewhere, but they never arrived. Descansos marks the death sites, the dark times, but they are also love notes to your suffering. They are transformative. There's a lot to be said for pinning things to the earth so that they don't follow us around. There's a lot to be said for laying them to rest. And I really love this idea of acknowledging all of the places in your life that you could have went one way, but you went another. She goes on to say that if you don't acknowledge these things, maybe you're harboring this resentment and this feeling. She says mainly this happens to women that are in their mid-30s or early 40s, but you have this feeling that things aren't the way they should be. Maybe you feel bitter, feeling like you should have taken a different path, or what would my life have looked like had I done this instead? And by doing this process of descansos, you can visit each of those little moments along your journey and really sit with it and forgive yourself for not going that way, or just give yourself the space to feel into the fact that you didn't make that decision, that you did make the decision that brought you right where you are today to the end of your timeline. I really like one of the lines that she said in the audiobook, and I'm not sure if it's here in my hard copy of the book, but she says, one of the most important decisions you can make in your life as a woman is the decision if you want to be bitter or not. And that was really powerful for me, because in my life, I know people who are extremely bitter. It just oozes out of them. You can just feel it, like nothing is ever good enough. And that's something that when I see in someone else, it gets reflected back to me. And I realize, like, oh my goodness, are there parts of myself and parts of my life that I do that? Especially because it brings so much up for me to be in contact with people like that, that it rubs me that wrong way, maybe because there's a little truth about it within myself. That's the thing, you know, when things are coming up for you, someone is quote unquote triggering you, it usually means that you have some stuff to look at yourself. But that's one for me that is huge, is this idea of bitterness and things not being good enough, being unable to be happy where you are in the present. So that's something that I know that I definitely need to look at and sit with and see where maybe I'm letting this bitterness creep in my own life. And I haven't done this exercise of descansos, but I think after the podcast, I will. I think I'll take the time to sit down and mark all of the places. Some of the things that immediately come to mind for me right now is just deciding to move. That's a huge one. Like, there's a death there. If I was staying in LA, how would my life look different? Or moving to California even, What if I stayed in Kansas? What if I took a different career path? What if I got the first job that I applied for out of college, which was at a huge advertising agency in Kansas City, and I really thought that's what I wanted. I thought that's what I wanted, that I was so crushed when I didn't land the interview or I didn't get the job at the place I interviewed for. There is still some healing that needs to happen there, even though I can look at my life now and I can see how much I have to be grateful for, how much I love it. There's little parts where you just think, what if things didn't go this way? What if I did decide to stay with somebody that I left? Just little stuff like that, all of the places where you made a decision and your life went one way. I just find that to be really powerful, and I never heard of this concept of mapping that all out and revisiting all of those things. I also think when we're revisiting all of those places that we ask ourselves, or we try to remember, why we made the decision that we did. You know, some of these things are completely out of our hands, like not getting a job that had nothing to do with me not wanting it enough. It was in somebody else's hands. But especially the decisions that we make that are in our hands, asking ourselves why, and maybe understanding if it was at the expense of our own feelings or our own wants. Did we make a decision because of somebody else? Did we put somebody else in front of ourselves? And I don't want to automatically say that's wrong, because sometimes in relationship, we have to put somebody else in front of ourselves. That is what a relationship is about. It's about compromise. It's about understanding our wants and somebody else's wants. And not just our loving relationships, but all relationships, friendships, familial. And that maybe is one of the biggest forks in the road along our journey, is that part of our lives where we decide if we want to have children or not. Or maybe that isn't even something that consciously gets decided from a very conscious place. Maybe it's something that just happens. You get pregnant and you have a baby. That is a huge fork in the road, regardless of you making that decision or not. Even if it was a very thought out decision, there still is this alternate reality of, what if that never happened and your life went this direction instead? Some alternate reality out there of a life where someone didn't have kids. And I think that's why, for me personally, this work is coming up right now, as I'm on this precipice of knowing more than ever in my life that I do think I want to have kids. And I say I do think because there still is this part of me that is like, can I do it? Do I really want it? Will I harbor any resentment? And I think that's why this type of work is so important to do, because you may not think you have trauma, or you may think that that decision is something you really, really want. I should say I. This might be a decision that I really, really want. But when it comes to the wounds that come out when you have kids, if you remember in the last episode, I was talking with my friend Megan about relationships and how if we were monks on a mountain, like, we would not have any of these traumas, because it's our relationships that show us and mirror to us our true feelings. They are what bring up trauma. They are what cause trauma. And I think the biggest relationship is between you and your parents, specifically you and your mom. If you haven't gotten into any mother wound type of work, it is really, really powerful. And I just was listening to Back from the Borderline. If you have not heard her podcast, Molly is incredible, and she just released an episode all about the mother wound, and it brought up so much of this for me, because that bitterness that I've been describing, when we make a change or not, that is something that can get passed down to your kids in a way that you don't even realize you're doing it. A lot of what she mentions are, there's this subtleness about it. that maybe a mom has with her child, that maybe the child has opportunities and things that she never got, and how you then can pass down this like resentment to your kids and put this heavy weight on their shoulders of this life you didn't get to live because you decided to have them instead. And that is something that I so do not want to do. And I know that you cannot be a perfect parent. I know that that's not like a goal I should have in mind, that there's no way you can't traumatize your kids, because trauma happens whether we're aware of it or not. And you may think, you know, I don't have any trauma, but trauma doesn't need to be this big, big thing. It's where these little things just rub up against us. And I know it's gonna happen having kids. Like, there's going to be some trauma there, but how can I as consciously as possible try to not put things on my children that is not their job? It's not their job to fulfill me or love me or make up for anything that I didn't do because I had to raise them instead. That's just a huge, huge thing that I'm personally struggling with, this like wanting to be 110% in if I'm going to do it, so that they understand that there's no resentment there. And I don't want to do it subconsciously resenting when things get hard and thinking like, oh, remember when I made that decision and I could have gone the other way? And I think that's what is so powerful about this type of work, because when we can look back at our past, maybe we feel like, oh my gosh, I've been carrying this weight of resentment and I had no idea. But if we can sit with it, we can remember why we made the decisions and forgive ourselves for it. That's the next step, is forgiveness. So that first step of just realizing it, being aware, that's always the first step to any type of healing. Being aware of it, understanding that there is a trauma there is grief there. The next step, sitting with it, understanding it, forgiving it. Forgiving it, deciding not to harbor it, and instead letting it go. Because when we do harbor it, and we may not even be aware of it, it's running in the background subconsciously. The way that we interact with people, our relationships, the way that we show up may be from that place where it's running in the background. And deciding instead to forgive and let it go lets us operate from a totally different place where we're not blaming anyone else for it. So when you're looking back at these decisions, letting go of the blame, even if the fork in the road was completely out of your hands, how can you forgive and let go? And there are a lot of different ways you can do forgiveness exercises. I think deciding to write a letter to somebody, even without any intention to send it, is huge. Or like I've mentioned, I really operate by voice. Like, maybe just recording a voice note to somebody without even the need to send it, and just fully allowing yourself to feel what forgiveness is towards that person, and also towards yourself. Doing this activity towards yourself as well. There are so many quotes about forgiveness that come up for me, and one of the ones that I want to pass along is, forgiveness does not change the past, but it does change the future. And I don't know who said that quote, but it really is powerful, because this decision to forgive and to let go of resentment for yourself and for others frees you up completely. And all of this work, honestly, not only helps you let go of the past, but it allows you to be more present in the now. Because holding on to those things from the past, tying yourself to the past, they are interrupting this present moment. And if you look at all of teachings from different religions and spirituality and any sort of teachers, they usually come back to being present here in the now. How can we do that? A big way of that is looking at our past, analyzing it, forgiving, and allowing yourself to go there. It's not about this obliviousness of, oh, that was the past and now I'm fine. That is being avoidant and choosing to be oblivious to something and acting like it never happened. And that can cause a lot of trauma too, especially when we talk about the mother wound or our parents. If they If you try to work on stuff now and you go to them and you say, hey, this happened in the past, and they're like, oh, no, it didn't. That's a big one. Oh, I don't remember that. Or did it happen? I don't remember it that way. Like those types of responses that we maybe are met with, or maybe within ourselves deciding not to look back at our traumas and to heal, that is us choosing to remain oblivious and avoidant. That's just avoidant behavior, and that can cause us a lot of pain as well. So it's a big decision to try to do this type of work. And this idea of desconsos that Dr. Estes brings up in this book, I think can be really, really powerful. It can help us get to the present and start anew and give us so much freedom for our futures. So much freedom for our futures. So if you do this exercise, let me know about it. I would love to hear how it is for you. I'm going to definitely try to do it. And I'm going to try to do it even back when I was little, and things happened and decisions were made. And just sitting with each part of yourself and allowing, I think, is going to be really, really powerful. Another really crazy thing about trauma and passing it down to our offsprings is it doesn't even have to be consciously something that you're doing or sharing. The scientific studies have found that it is being genetically passed down to our kids. So I know there's not one way to like raise your kids perfectly, because even in our genes, we are passing down trauma. And I just want to share this study that was done in Nature Neuroscience in 2013. They took male mice and they had them smell cherry blossom, and then they shocked the mice. And after a few days, the smell of cherry blossom would entice fear in these mice. And then they bred the mice with females that never had the shock therapy or the cherry blossom smell, and their offspring had a fear response to the cherry blossom smell. And this happened for at least 3 generations. I'm trying to find more research on how much, but that study, and I know we can say we're not mice, that study just goes to show how trauma can live in our bodies and can be passed down without us actively doing it or sharing it. And maybe this type of work can help us to clear some of that and not pass it down in such a way. I'm not sure, but I like to believe if we can confront these things and sit with our trauma and sit with our grief, that we won't pass them down, because we won't be operating in our living and living our lives on this autopilot place and reacting from this place of trauma. Now, there was another study done in 2017 at the University of California in San Francisco that showed that children who were exposed to trauma in utero were more likely to have anxiety and depression as adults. So these things can happen to us even when we're not out of our mother's wounds yet. The researchers found that the children who are exposed to trauma in utero had changes to their DNA methylation. DNA methylation is a process that controls how genes are turned on and off, and the changes in DNA methylation in the children who are exposed to trauma in utero may have contributed to the anxiety and depression, which is wild to me. They also found that the children who were exposed to trauma in utero had higher levels of the stress hormone cortisol, and cortisol can damage the hippocampus, which is the part of the brain that is important for learning and memory retention. And that damage alone, they think, can lead to the anxiety and depression. So this is just another reason why I want to combat all of these things before I make that conscious decision of mothering a child, even before they get into my body, just creating this space where I can heal as much as possible. And that may seem like a pipe dream, but just knowing what we know now about trauma and knowing what I know from my own lived experience as a baby and growing up, like, how can I do that differently by using the information that I have? Now, there is so much more to this book. I didn't even get into any of the stories, any of the folk tales that she discusses and dissects. I highly suggest that you read it if you feel called to. One thing I will say that the introduction can be a little bit heavy and worded, so if it helps, skip the introduction if you have this book. And go ahead and start reading right when she starts telling the stories. But the last thing I want to leave you with is this section in the end here where she says, "The ways and means of living with the instinctive nature are many, and the answers to your deepest questions change and change as the world changes. So it cannot be said, do this and this in this particular order and all will be well. But over my lifetime, as I've met wolves, I've tried to puzzle out how they live, for the most part, in such harmony. So for peaceable purpose, I would suggest you begin right now with any point on this list. For those who are struggling, it may help greatly to begin with number 10. General wolf rules for life. 1. Eat. 2. Rest. 3. Rove in between. 4. Render loyalty. 5. Love the children. 6. Cavil in moonlight. 7. Tune your ears. 8. Attend to the bones. 9. Make love. 10. Howl often." This book. If you've read this book, share with me your favorite story. If you are going to read this book, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram and message me about it. I'm going to dive back into the stories myself and read it from beginning to end because I remember how much it brought up for me. And it helps me look at the shadow, and it helped me look at my childhood trauma. And yeah, I'm happy to share it with you. If this is the first time you're hearing about it, give it a listen too. If you want a more condensed version, download that Libby audiobook. It's a very tiny version of this because this book has so much more than that. That is where I think I will leave it for today. Thank you guys so much if you chose to listen to me, and it means a lot, honestly. I know there is so much out there that you could be listening to or doing with your day, and having the space for me to have these conversations is healing for my own soul. So thank you for allowing me that space. If it spoke to you in any way, please let me know. Leave a voicemail. I'd love to hear from you. And if you would like to share this with your friends, please share it. I am so appreciative. I hope you have a beautiful day. Thank you so much for listening to Conversations with Moon Body Soul. Be sure to follow if you don't want to miss an episode. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and a rating. And if you want to email over any special guests or topic suggestions, email hello@moonbodysoul.com.